white people want to know how to be white allies for people of color. We are confused by the mixed messages about whether we should speak up or sit down, and what it means to participate in the movement for black and brown lives. These mixed messages originate from within the movement itself. In this episode, white people talk about what it means to be a white ally. This is a recording of the June 2020 meeting of Our Revolution, Southern California, and Progressive Democrats of America, South Orange County Chapter. We begin with Spencer Kelly, and then Dr. Dave Donovan raises his old pitch that white people shouldn't speak up for others, but should lift up others to speak for themselves. Jennifer Beck, the leader of the group, followed. And then I, Rich Procida, suggest that my recent show on Trump and systemic racism is an example of lifting up the voice of those most affected without nixing one's own contribution to the movement. Then, Dr. Bill Hogeman responds, followed by Danette Abbott and Jessica Lund. On August 8, 2020, at 11 a.m., I will be hosting a Zoom meeting of local activists from Los Angeles and Orange County to organize a chapter of Progressive Democrats of America here in the East Los Angeles County, North Orange County area. We will have time to talk and organize. The site to register is tinyurl.com/PDAELACNOC. Remember, that stands for Progressive Democrats of America, East LA County, North OC. It's also in the show description. With that, welcome to Bible Study for Progressives. Welcome to Bible Study for Progressives, a show where moderates, liberals, and leftists of all faiths and ideologies come together to discuss scripture, spirituality, and politics. We engage scripture in its historical context, plumb its depths for wisdom and guidance, and apply its lessons to current events and social issues. Whether you're a liberal evangelical, a New Age spiritualist, a social justice activist, or a postmodern theologian, there's something in this show for you. Come, be energized in spirit and mind to understand the word and what it means to be a spiritual person in today's world.
I saw, this was in Huntington Beach, a city councilor, Kimberly Carr, she's a Democrat. She did, I think, a local roundtable with like the police chief and maybe a few other city officials, and they talked about race and coming together in unity in Huntington Beach, and they invited different youth groups to attend. So I think kind of something like that, especially for younger people, trying to reach out with the city council members and different organizations and really talking about what's affecting people in this day and age. I think that's a good start for sure. And I heard that was pretty successful. So I thought that's a good idea.
Anybody else?
Well, I just try to make an old pitch that's still going, that we can't just pose as spokespeople for the people that need our help. We really need to go to them. We really need to go and have them, encourage them to be active rather than saying we're just the spokespeople for them. It's an old problem, and it's still with us pretty big.
Yeah, actually, Senator, the call was co-hosted by the Lavender, I think it was Lavender, no, it wasn't the Lavender Dem Club, it was the LGBTQ caucus. Is that what they're called? The caucus, the state caucus? Because Aaron McCall was on the call.
Yeah.
So yeah, they definitely had like a large presence on that particular call, but you're absolutely right. I feel that way too about like what we're seeing with the whole George Floyd protests and the whole conversation right now around criminal justice reform is that, especially for those of us who are so white, like we need to like take a step back and listen and figure out how do they want us to support them and like let them lead this movement and like support them in their actions, right? Because I've kind of complained about this online a little bit. I still see like a lot of white activists trying to be like the leading voices about what's happening over the last few weeks. And I think our best thing to do right now is to lift up the people of color who are taking the lead, right?
Well, it's being handled, but of course it centers on the Black Lives Movement that's going great for the people to participate. But in that is also other people of color that are kind of just blended in, but especially in Orange County, we need to be concerned about Latinx, especially those that are hurting for survival and for making a living. So I just hope that somehow we can give voice to the people themselves that are really at stake here.
Yeah, I also agree with you, Jenna. I think the first thing a lot of white activists should be doing is stepping back and really looking at themselves and asking, you know, okay, what can I do to help and what should I do? And for me, that kind of took place as being a peacekeeper at a lot of the rallies and protests that started up after the George Floyd murder. And I thought that was the best way I could help, you know, with my time and really just try to create a peaceful environment for people to speak and give their peace. And I have a Black brother and he's told me that he feels emotionally drained. And I think that's kind of a common theme through a lot of people right now. And he just said, even saying, you know, I support you, I see you, I hear you, how can I help you? Even just small things like that is so important. Just making sure that we're elevating Black voices and people of color, it's super important right now.
Does anybody else want to share their experiences about going to any of these BLM protests or how you've what you've done to support the community over the last few weeks?
Well, what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to share a podcast I did because as far as being white allies, I think it's a good example. I have on the podcast a minister, a Black minister named Ira Dotson, and he was able to speak. I don't think that white people should be so uninvolved and in the background that we don't have any impact on anything. But at the same time, I think we should all step up. We all, there's no room for people to step back. There's no room. We don't have a scarcity of leadership opportunities. No, everybody needs to step up. This is an opportunity for everybody to participate and not to hold back. But on this podcast, Ira, who's a Black man, he's most of the podcast. So this is an effort to lift up a voice of a Black person, but also I have another scholar in there who I think is Indian or East Asian, but also to participate ourselves and to be involved and to be active. There's no reason that we need to restrain our activism and hold back and not participate and not be involved and not lead. We need to be involved. So this, I think, is a good example of both lifting up Black peoples and being a white ally and not holding back and not keeping, I mean, and it's exactly what, you know, we don't want, which is white people not doing anything, not saying anything, just going on and not participating. If we want to put people away and push them in the back and say, don't say anything, don't be involved, don't do anything of any importance, then that's where we're going to, then that's just the same thing that white people have done for years. So I don't see the purpose of people not standing up, raising their voices. That's what being an ally is. So I share that. If you haven't got a chance to listen to it, it's only a 29-minute podcast. It's really good. And so that's a good example of what it, how to be a white ally.
Thank you. Dr. Bill?
Yeah, Rich, thanks for sharing that. Let me see if hopefully I can get to listen to that after this meeting. But I agree that stepping back, I think, just means stepping back from leadership, not participation. So, yeah, we can't, you know, as white people, we can't know actually what Black Lives Matter actually means the same way as Black people. So, you know, it's an existential threat that you know, white people are privileged not to have, not to entertain in their lives. So I think, you know, we know what existential threats are. We know that climate is an existential threat. We know that inadequate healthcare is an existential threat. We know that just being poor in this country is an existential threat. It'll throw you on the streets, and in which case you're twice as likely to die than if you have a shelter. So I think there's a wealth of activist community out there that we can all be a part of. This last weekend was the Poor People's Campaign had like a whole weekend thing. And the Reverend William Barber just gave the most outstanding speech. If you just go to Poor People's Campaign website, I'm sure they still have his speech from last Saturday. It was phenomenal. So I think we can participate. We can go to these things online. Some of us, like me, are too old to be going to protests right now, you know, because I'm worried I'm going to come down with the virus and give it to other people and all that stuff. So we're not doing in the street protests and all of that. We're literally social distancing ourselves into confinement, you know. But you can still be involved online. You can join these actions, these activities and events that are happening all around us. And I think that supports the effort. And at the same time, we have to work on the others' economic and social justice issues and the peace and war issues, you know, so like Green New Deal, for example, which includes college for all and jobs for all and Medicare for all, you know, at the same time as we transition energy. It's like, you can't do one without the other. The PDA late founder Tim Carpenter used to say, you got to chew gum and walk at the same time. There's just no way to choose one or the other. Those of us who care enough to be in a meeting like this have it in our blood. So we're gonna be doing that stuff, and we shouldn't feel bad about doing it, about participating. But we do have to realize where we have kind of credibility for leadership or taking the backseat. We're still in the car, but we're in the backseat. Bad analogy.
Spencer?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on what Rich said. I agree that, you know, if you're a white person, now is not the time to be silent. You need to be speaking out against racism, police brutality, and all other injustices that are going on. The only thing really to worry about is that you're not asserting yourself to the point where it's like a white savior complex. But no, if you're white, absolutely, you need to be speaking out and saying what's wrong and how to help everyone else.
Danette?
I went to a march in Santa Ana. I think it was, I can't remember because time is blurry right now, but probably like 3 weeks ago. And it was awesome. All the protesters had masks on. And I think they did a follow-up study on if protesters were at a greater risk of contracting COVID, and they weren't, because we were observing the facial mask regulation. And then I went to two other ones, and it was just really great. And I do agree that white people have to stay in the background as support. You have no right to take over that conversation at all. You just need to be in the background, willing to support and get out there too, but no dialogue unless you're asked for it, because that's not your place.
Right, and that was kind of my point, was that when I say that there's, I've seen a lot of white activists sort of trying to take the lead on the conversation. A really good example of this is how over the last couple of weeks, we have been hearing more and more about defunding the police. And there have been a lot of white people who have tried to reframe that messaging and turn it into something that it isn't, and try and say that, oh no, they want to get rid of police departments entirely, when they actually are talking about defunding an organization, similarly to what Trump has done to the education department. He has defunded the education department. It still exists, but it has a much smaller budget than it did previously because he keeps tearing away at it. And that's what they're talking about doing, is taking the money that already exists in a budget and reallocating it to services that make more sense for an inner city. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did a Q&A where she was asked, what does defunding the police look like? And she said, it looks like affluent white neighborhoods. It looks like affluent white neighborhoods. We have much smaller police forces. We invest in infrastructure. We invest in beautifying the city. We invest in our education and schools and everything else. And that's what they're talking about, is that right now the police agencies in inner cities are responding to calls that they shouldn't have to respond to, right? They're handling things that there should be other city departments that handle, like dog catching or like mental health services or things of that nature. And what they're saying is that if we demilitarize our police agencies in these larger inner cities, and we actually trust our citizens instead of harass them constantly with police people, and invest this money into other services, then we can improve the quality of life in the cities. And so when I say white people need to stop trying to take the lead on these conversations, that's exactly what I'm referring to, is that white people were immediately thrown off by them calling it defund the police, even though that is a very standard term for what you do when you're downsizing something. It's not, but they went to extremes trying to say, no, no, you can't do this. You can't do this, because there's so many people out there that just don't even understand the concept of it, and tried to reframe it and make it something that it wasn't, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to add to that, that it's not so much white people as it's propaganda. So what really happened was not that white people heard this defund the police and then all of a sudden they got all upset. No, what really happened was the media took that term, and in propaganda, we often have words turned into weapons and used against us. And so that's how it works. So once the media, the right-wing media primarily, picked up on that, they ran with it. They started pushing it. And Trump immediately saw the value to divide the country and divide people, and he immediately ran with it. And so what happens then is that's when white people get upset, right? And most of the time they're looking for something to support their racist or anti-freedom, whatever you want to call it, their agenda. So they're looking for it already, and then it's fed to them, and then they respond. So sometimes we look at it as, oh, white people are doing this, and then they have all this reaction. No, it's really, they're being told what to think, and they're just doing what they're told, and they're basically not thinking, period. And I would add that there are no roles that are not leadership roles. Every role in a social movement is a leadership role. There's no role where we sit back and hang in the back and do nothing. There's only leadership roles. That's it, nothing else. So to say that we should not become leaders is to say we should not participate, because there is nothing other than leadership roles. And every movement needs to constantly be recruiting leaders. And if it does not recruit leaders, it will eventually die. So that's really the issue here. The rhetoric is really off on not of what actually the roles are in these groups. They're all leadership roles. So that's my feeling on it, that there is no such thing as a non-leadership role in a social movement. And so inevitably, in the end result, that means that to say people can't step up and be leaders in the social movement is to basically exclude them from the movement altogether.
I understand where you're coming from, but I think that's really high level. When I talk about there are times when we have to step back, I'm saying that there are also roles where you're a facilitator or you are the support person. You're helping to amplify somebody else's voice. You're helping to volunteer for their cause. You know, for example, we have candidates, right? And the candidate then has a campaign manager and then has like a field director and then has recruits volunteers. They have staffers. They have an organization, right? Not everybody can be at the top of the organization. Some of us are supporting the organization. And that's what I'm saying is that we need to help propel their voices up in this movement and help them be successful in what they need to do and not try and control that conversation for them. So when Black Lives Matter activists are out there organizing protests, it's our job to show up and say, how can I help you? What can I do to make this a successful event? Right? And maybe that's me being a leader because I took the time out of my day to actually go there and help them, but I'm not actually trying to get credit or visibility for their work. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying, Rich?
Piggybacking off
of that. Yeah, kind of, but I'm just not sure that, you know, you have the definition of a support role, carrying water for people, and then the one leader. Well, obviously, I think that anybody and everybody who stands up for racial justice and who stands up to fight oppression and lifts up in so doing, that's actually how you lift up the voice of minorities. That's how you do it. Who uses their privilege, not denies their privilege, but uses it for the purpose of raising up the lowly, of defeating oppression. I don't think that should be stopped at all, nor inhibited, nor discouraged by anybody.
Jessica?
I was going to say, piggybacking off of what you said, Jennifer, I think it's a matter of respect and sort of humility of like, this movement is a movement for justice for sure, but it's a movement for a specific justice. And I personally don't fall in that group, not because I wouldn't be willing to have or anything, but just by an accident of birth. And therefore it is not my place to direct it or co-opt it or step on toes. It's my place to, and I think all of our places to follow the lead of the people who are most impacted. And I think there is a distinction in that regard of who should be the leaders and who should be the support network. And it was the same on Bernie's campaign. A lot of people wanted it to be run different ways. Maybe even I wanted it to be run different ways at different times. But the fact is, it was Bernie's campaign and he sets the tone, right? And we can all say maybe he didn't do it the right way. But if you're trying to help a specific goal, you need to follow the leaders of that movement. And I think it's a matter of respect and humility.
Okay, I'm going to take one more. And then I also saw that Shahid just joined the call. So we'll go one more with Spencer. And then I'm going to, oh, by the way, Shahid, we are recording this meeting and we're broadcasting to Facebook. So thank you so much for joining us. I'll give you a minute to collect your thoughts while Spencer is wrapping us up.
Sounds good. Thanks.
I just wanted to reiterate kind of what you said, Jenna. What's really important right now is not co-opting or changing the messaging. So, for example, defund the police. I live in Huntington Beach, and for probably the most conservatives who live around here, they think about that term and just think, oh my goodness, it scares them so much. But all we can do is try to create a clear definition and help explain what that means. But I don't think it's our place at all to try to change that messaging or terminology. And I've been guilty about that, trying to think like, okay, what's a better, easier way to try to portray this message that's more friendly. But I think as long as we create clear definitions and help support the leaders who are behind this, then that's really what we should be doing right now. And, you know, explaining we're allocating resources to other areas that need those resources that have been neglected. So it's really important to just kind of lift up the Black voices in this movement and come together and say, okay, we're all here to help. How can we help?
This has been Bible Study for Progressives. If you enjoyed the program, please subscribe to our podcast or put us in your favorites and write a 5-star review. Tell your friends about us and share us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and click the donate button at modernlectionaries.blogspot.com. Your support will help us reach more people, produce more and better shows, and cover the cost of production. Feel free to send me a note or comment on the show. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Rich Procida. Thank you for listening.